Hello, 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 people. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day, whatever time zone you're listening in from. Welcome to the Shiny Happy People podcast. This is Vinay, your host. Today is an interview segment. We have a guest, our first guest of 2023. I hope the year's got off to a rocking start for all of you. And you're all full on to make so much happen this year. And our guest interview today, some of the stuff that she's going to talk about, she and I are going to talk about, hopefully will set you up for that as well. So our guest today is Natalia Rachel. She's an author, a speaker, a trauma-informed therapist. She's a consultant. She does a lot of amazing work on healing. She's based out of Singapore, originally from Australia, and is a recipient of the Women Icons Asia Entrepreneurship Award in 2022. So she's been doing some amazing work. She runs a company called Iluma Health, and she's doing a lot of interesting work around trauma, bias, disconnect, and disrespect. You know, all of these topics have taken on, I hate to use the term new life, or at least come more into center attention, particularly in the pandemic and all these conversations around mental well-being and psychological safety. So she and I are going to explore these topics, her journey, and just trying to understand what each one of us can be doing to get better as individuals and enable others around us to get better as well. So more from the discussion right after this break. Okay, folks. So finally, we have our guest with us, Natalia Rachel. Natalia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brilliant. And, you know, I just did a very big introduction about all the amazing work that you're doing, et cetera. One thing I did not introduce, and my first question to you is, tell me a little bit about yourself. What's the origin story? What's your genesis story?
It's a big story, so I'll do my best to put it in a very little nutshell. So my name's Natalia Rachel. I'm an author, a speaker, a therapist, and a consultant. And all of my work is about helping us to better understand trauma and the nature of humanity at this time in the world and develop pathways for us to all heal and co-create a much kinder, more equitable world where we can all belong and feel a sense of peace and power. And what got me into this work initially is living through and recovering from my own very traumatic past that spanned many decades. So I spent my whole life trying to figure out what's wrong with me? Why am I like this? And why does this world seem not like it's meant to be? And I guess a lifetime of looking under every rock and around every corner led me to eventually heal and change my reality and then to go on and study and work in the field. So that's the origin story in a nutshell.
Very, very interesting. And of course, your accent is Australian, so I'm assuming the origin started in Australia as
yes.
well.
Yes, born in Sydney, but living in Singapore for the last 6 years. 6 years today. It's my 6 year anniversary today.
Oh, well, congratulations. So here's the question. I mean, obviously, you know, I was talking to somebody over the Christmas break and said, when you were 7 years old, did you believe that you would be doing what you're doing today, right? I mean, I had different aspirations when I was seven. So same thing at the age of seven, probably you weren't thinking I was going to do this kind of work that I was doing.
Not exactly, but you know what? When I was seven is the age I started writing poetry, and I'm now an author. And I also, when I was little, I wanted to be an actress. And although I'm not an actress, to me, speaking taps into that part of myself. So maybe I wasn't exactly on track, but I guess there's always been the sense of wanting to speak and write.
So it sort of manifested itself in other ways, right?
But in a very roundabout, complicated, difficult nature. But it's like, finally, I'm here doing what I'm exactly meant to do and always wanted to do.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, in your profile, I saw that a lot of your academics was in marketing, and you worked in marketing to start off with as well, right?
Yeah.
And so what was the transition point from letting go of marketing to the work that you're doing today?
That's a great question. And, you know, no one has ever asked me about this. So thank you. I love it. So my first career was in marketing and content. So always a writer, always a creator, always trying to understand human behavior and how to speak to humans. So there's that link from then to now. But when you're in marketing, you're selling something, right, all the time. And so it, you know, once I had children, all of a sudden I didn't want to sell anyone anything anymore. I just wanted to love my kids and look after myself. So I decided to pause. And at the time I thought, oh, I'm going to pause and I'll be back when my daughter, my eldest, is 6 weeks old. But when I sort of got into motherhood, I just had no interest to go back there. And it was also during those early years of motherhood that my very deep healing journey began. And I think the moment I understood that there was so much more to life than marketing, and that to learn to love my children and love myself well was the point of life, everything shifted. And then I just decided to make a career change.
Right. And you know, there's something that I remember reading a statistic ages ago that said almost 60% of professionals at any point in time are not working in the field that's linked to their academics. Right. So you made a career change. I made a career change. So I think that number is very, very accurate, at least anecdotally. So when you decided to make the career change, how did you pick up the skills to be doing this? What was your journey? How did you say, I'm going to go into healing? It's not something that you just wake up and say, okay, I'm going to do it, right? There's a skill component to it. So what was that?
So I started to be very interested in everything healing. So I was doing a lot of stuff for myself and trying out different modalities and going to different events and reading. And in my social media feed one day, it came up for a hypnotherapy training. And I just had this full body yes experience. And I'd never had that about a training or education before. I'd never thought about being a hypnotherapist, but I just decided, you know what? I'm going to do this. And the dates match. My husband back then, I'm not married anymore, but back then my husband was like, yep, those dates work. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so that's where my journey of study began. And I studied with the London Regression Academy, and I enjoyed that experience so deeply. And I felt like a natural fit as a hypnotherapist. And so I went on to deepen the study, and I did my diploma in regression therapy. And at the same time, I studied craniosacral therapy, which is a touch modality. So it's dealing with the body. So I had one educational track all about the mind, the subconscious, and another educational track all about the body. So they were my two core trainings. And after those, I began to work, and I very quickly began to blend the two concepts and develop a more, I guess, nuanced or textured approach to working with clients. And after that, I've done all kinds of professional development trainings all over the world, some of them in the realms of psychotherapy, but some of them in the realms of energy and healing. Like I did a mentorship with a Qigong master in Indonesia, and I did biodynamic breath training. So all kinds of different trainings that have really added so many different perspectives. So I now say, when I think about humans and healing and dynamics, it's like I'm looking through this kaleidoscope.
Right. So it's very interesting. And a couple of words stood out for me, like biodynamic breath training and all of that. I'm going to come back, swing around to that in a bit. But I'm just very, very curious, because when we make career changes, we learn all of these skills. But how do we actually, what's been your secret, or what was your learning to actually go out and say, okay, I'm now a practitioner in this. Hey, client, I'm here to serve you. Or how do you do that? Because the credibility that you had was in marketing, and suddenly you're going and saying, here's a whole new landscape I'm entering, and sign up with me. What was that journey like?
So if I'm very honest, the clients arrived before the training did, which is very unusual. So I had gone through this incredible healing experience. So a little bit of my backstory, I was physically ill for over a decade. I didn't have use of my legs or hands at periods. I was very sick. I was having intravenous treatments and, you know, you would not recognize me to look at me back then. And so when I finally figured it out, after all this journey of trying to heal myself, there was a line of people at the door saying, hey, how did you do that? I've got something similar going on. Can you help me? And I thought, oh my gosh, I actually think I can, but I better study. So it was really backwards for me. And it's funny to think about it because most of my life has not been in order of how you think it would go. And the nature of healing, and I believe life in general, is non-linear. So something I want to encourage all of us to do is to stop thinking in these sequences that I don't know who's developed. This is the rules for how it goes. That's not necessarily the case. So if we open our minds, we can reorganize and do things in a different sequence.
That's really interesting, right? The non-linear part that you mentioned. So your credibility really was the fact that you yourself went through that journey and people saw you and said, how the hell did Natalia do this, right? I mean, she must have a secret that she can share with us.
Yeah. But do you know, I feel a bit vulnerable to say this. So when I started working, I did have a bit of imposter syndrome, I guess, like, am I good enough to be doing this? You know, I'm not that experienced. I'm starting out. And there were some people, and there are still plenty of people who question my credibility in the field of work that I'm doing now, because I don't have this very, very large academic background. So after some years working as a therapist, I became a clinic director. So I joined forces with a Chinese medicine doctor and we started running complementary health clinics in Singapore. And, you know, I had no idea what I was doing, but I just figured it out. We figured it out. We navigated it. And it was those years in clinic administration that gave me a lot of credibility to then be able to step up as a speaker and an author. So again, I think we can get credibility in different ways. It's all about how hard we work and how much we can own the experiences that we've been through and not be scared to say, yeah, what I've been through and the way that I have learned is valid. So my learnings have come from a very non-traditional route.
No, which is great, right? And there's an old expression, so it's the school of hard knocks, so you went through it, right?
Many hard knocks.
Yes. So if I asked you to think back and reflect on what was your single biggest insight or learning or takeaway from those early days getting into this field, what would that one thing be?
I think the most important thing for me in this work and in life is to stay incredibly humble and grounded and to keep looking at myself, to keep being curious and inquiring about my role in what I'm creating, whether that's in my life in general, whether it's with clients, whether it's with any layer of my experience, because we're putting out and we're creating, we play a part in the dynamics in our life. And so to just keep coming back to myself, my humility, my best intentions, and seeing how can I show up and create in ways that feel authentic and with integrity.
I love what you just shared, the authenticity and how we show up is so critical, right? Thank you for sharing that.
You're listening to the Shiny Happy People podcast. Subscribe to us on your favorite platforms. This podcast is sponsored by C2COD, your organizational development consulting partner, bringing people and strategy together. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook using the handle at C2COD and get updates on our upcoming episodes.
Just want to kind of come back to the work that you're doing, because when you rattled off all of this skills you picked up, the areas you went and learned, etc., I'm getting a sense that your focus is really a very holistic approach, because everything I know, when you talk about healing practitioners, they either do this area, that area, but you seem to be skilled in all of that. Is there any one area that you focus on, or am I right in guessing that you take a very holistic approach in healing?
My approach is to listen to the language of trauma and humanity and to decode it and respond to it. So that's in essence all of it. And then the things I've learned, they're all just tools. They're all tools that I can use. But the biggest focus is on listening, decoding, and responding. Because I think so much of who we are and who have we have become as a humanity is this very complex reaction to threat and exclusion. And that's the seed of trauma. And so it manifests or decontextualizes through our bodies, through our minds, and through our relating dynamics, through the way we perceive, express, and relate. And so if I can help others, whether it's one-to-one in a corporate culture or in a greater way through writing and speaking, to begin to decode the person or the people or the culture that has been created through trauma and give them tools to then begin to heal, that's what it's all about for me.
The listening is obviously the core skill, right? Because you're there, being there with that person. And did you have a crystal ball years ago that predicted the era that we went through with COVID and all of that? Because the need for all of this healing and psychological trauma, mental health, and has never, ever been as critical as it has in history, in the recent history. But did you have a crystal ball knowing that you're right now in the center of the most important thing that humans need?
You know, one of my mentors said to me, your life was preparing you for this time. You're right on time. Everything you've learned, it's for this time. And, you know, part of me wants to believe that. Part of me doesn't want to believe that. So maybe I have some processing to do. But it's funny because at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, I was still running my health clinics. And I was watching very clearly trends in physical health, trends in mental health, trends in the kinds of calls, the kinds that we got loads of distress calls. And so that was really interesting. And what I did do right at the beginning of the pandemic was I released a series of articles that I turned into an ebook, and it was all about what COVID was going to do to us and how we needed to support ourselves through and beyond it. And so that ebook launched very near the beginning of the pandemic. I didn't have nearly as big a following or reach as I do now, but I believe a lot of the tools were there at the beginning, and it's been interesting to see the waves of mental health crisis that still continue because most of us have had no idea how to look after ourselves through these very traumatic years.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I'm always very curious when I talk to the whole, you know, like you were practitioners in this, that before the pandemic, a lot of the conversations, and I'm going to just ask you, the health clinic that you were running, a large part of the foundation that it started was really physical health, right? Everybody starts with, I want to, and mental health conversations were a little bit, for lack of a better word, taboo. It just wasn't the right, everyone wasn't as open to talk about it. I remember, one of my friends telling me, whispering to me, hey, I'm seeing a psychiatrist. And I'm like, okay, nothing wrong with it. And he's like, yeah, but don't tell anyone, right? So it was just 2018, 2019. And then in 2020, it shifted. And today, it's a much more open conversation around mental health and safety and all of that. What's been your experience with that transition? Because I'm getting a sense that you were a, way before the pandemic, you were focusing on mental health and all of that stuff. But how easy was it for people to get people to open up and be receptive to it?
I think the silver lining of COVID was that it forced mental health to come to the light. You know, we realized this is a problem we can't ignore. And, oh, it's not just a problem now. It's a problem that's been going on for a really long time. We're only finally seeing it. And what was interesting for me was, yes, I'd been working in this space the whole time, but pretty quietly in a pretty sort of enclosed way. And as COVID started to happen, I started getting all these calls from corporates could you come and speak about mental health, about burnout, about, you know, fear of being alone, all of these things? And I was like, I think I can do that. All right. So I did. And that's really when my speaking career began, at the beginning of COVID, because I just started getting all these calls. And at the beginning, I was really inundated. But then, you know, as happens in our commercial world, every coach under the sun was then talking about mental health. So they just slowed down. And I was like, okay, well, you know, that's cool for me too. But I decided, because I've always been like a couple of steps ahead of the conversation, I decided, well, now I actually think the world is ready to talk about trauma. So that's when I really decided, you know, personally and professionally, I'm going to start not trying to sneak the topic of trauma under mental health anymore. I'm just going to focus on this and I'm just going to talk about this. And it felt like there was just this readiness. And that is the case, because more and more people are speaking about trauma, more and more people are connecting to my work. You know, my book on the topic came out, but where I do still see a block, or, you know, that we're behind, is in the corporate space. And so it's very common that if I'm talking about my work or someone else is talking about me in the corporate space, they'll be like, oh, no, we don't want to talk about trauma. That's too heavy. We can talk about mental health. You know, we can talk about feeling anxious or down, but trauma, that's too intense. So that's kind of the last year what I've been seeing. And I'm like, guys, so much of our experience of both mental health and of feelings of exclusion have origins in trauma. And now it's about building the capacity to take the conversation another layer deeper. And it's beginning to happen, but it's really slow going.
It's really fascinating you say that, right? Because it's about, when does it start trending? So maybe you're talking about trauma way ahead, like you said, you're two steps ahead of the game, or the conversation in the public. And but if you think about it, PTSD, right, post-traumatic, that term originated in the, what, 80s? But it really became front and center in conversations, I would say, maybe the early 2000s. But it just it became, now people talk about PTSD in many, many aspects of life that you get it. It doesn't necessarily happen in the battlefield. And then we were talking about going and seeing psychologists or psychiatrists, and then mental health and mental well-being became front and center. So why do you think there's a reluctance to talk about trauma?
It's confronting. There's an inherent connotation of shame, like, oh, trauma, that's bad, that's terrible, don't want to have that. So, you know, there's these connotations that we don't want to have a trauma. And then that means we're in some way dysfunctional or damaged. And if we were dysfunctional or damaged, maybe we wouldn't be treated the same way. Maybe we would be excluded, or maybe we would be rejected, or maybe we wouldn't get that promotion. And that's how this mental health conversation links to the DEI conversation very deeply, because most of us are ashamed of our pain and ashamed of our trauma and ashamed of our distress and ashamed of our dysfunction. And so we don't want to talk about it. But the issue is that we have to start talking about it. Another piece in there is that, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, there wasn't much information or education about trauma. There is so much more. So the science is catching up. So there are more papers and studies and information and resources available. So it's just like, it's just touching the mainstream, but just touching. And I still think there's 10, 20, 30 years ahead where it just becomes a normal thing that we all deal with, because most of us have experienced some level of trauma. And if we feel we haven't, we are relating with somebody who does. So if we are in any way relating with people, which is every human in the world, I believe it's our duty to understand the nature of trauma, how it shows up inside us, how it creates bias, judgment, and exclusion, and learn how we can begin to harness our incredible power as relational humans to create healing and social change.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that perspective. And it's what strikes me from what you just said, right? It's the feeling of inadequacy to some degree that you started with. It's exactly the same thing that people didn't want to talk about PTSD. People didn't want to talk about mental health because talking about it might imply that you're not adequate enough. So I guess we're just not learning from the mistakes that we made in the past.
I think so.
We've got to get over it. Yeah.
There's another important thing I think to explore in this little part of the conversation, which is for many, that fear of being penalized or excluded or rejected is very real, particularly at work. So if you rock up to work having a trauma response or just not able to function at full steam that day, you're going to get penalized. And so it's interesting as employers start to say, it's okay to be okay, it's okay to have anxiety. Is it really? Are you really going to be treating people the same way if they're not able to perform for a day, a week, a month? And in most cases, the answer is no. And that's doubly confusing for the employee because on the one hand, they're being told it's okay to be vulnerable, but the reality is actually, no, it's not. So then there's more confusion. There's more uncertainty. There's more walking on eggshells and hypervigilance. Yeah. And further and further disconnection. So what I would like to see is that before employers start saying, yeah, let's be vulnerable, that they actually understand what that means and have the systems and strategies in place to promote it and to facilitate it, and also have really clear boundaries about where their tolerance, acceptance, and responsibility begins and ends. And this does not exist in most organizations who are saying, yeah, be vulnerable, tell us about your mental health issues.
Yeah, that's a great point. And in fact, I was talking to a leader some time ago, and he said, look, you know, I'm struggling with, it was in a coaching conversation, he said, I'm struggling with my responsibility as a leader to be, have my people vulnerable, open up, etc. But when they do and they share all of this, I don't know what to do with it. Right? I don't know where to take this, right? It's that I think the what you're doing is so important there, the healing part. So yeah. What's next? How do you...
You know, when someone does that, like that, what you've shared is such an important piece. When someone is told, yeah, it's safe, be vulnerable, tell me what's going on, and they open their chest and they bring their heart out of their hands, say, here's my vulnerable truth, and it's not met in the right way, that can feel incredibly re-traumatizing. And for someone that's actually been struggling a really long time, that can just blow them apart and really send them on a downward spiral. So it's dangerous. And it's funny because vulnerability is this buzzword. I think the next step is for leaders to learn, A, what trauma is, what's going on inside someone that's experienced these things, and how to hold space, because it's not something they've been taught. And the other thing that I think is really important is that organizations should consider creating specific roles where someone like me who is trained can come in and not necessarily support each individual, but to support the leader to continue to learn how to best respond. So it's a little bit like supervision. So when you're a therapist, you have a supervisor. And when you have a case that comes up that you're not quite sure how to deal with, or you worry that your shadow got into the mix, you go and talk to your supervisor. And so when leaders have people that are working under them that have this stuff coming up, they need to be supported too. It doesn't make sense that they should be able to just manage it and do it. That's not their training. And even anyone who is really trained still needs to be supported in their process of supporting others.
Yeah, you're so right in that perspective. And as you rightly said, organizations are not set up for that, providing that support, right?
No.
They just are not. So are you seeing more and more organizations now reaching out to you and saying, hey, we genuinely want to open up this conversation and we want to provide that healing support to the people who may need it as well? Is that how it...
Very few organizations are doing it. Some are doing it. So I do get inquiries. But something that's interesting is when I say, well, this is a big task and this is the commitment it takes, most don't want to put the budget and resource there. And so I'm not up for box ticking. I'm not up for coming and running. a 1 hour session on mental health because I don't think it does that much. So this is long-term work. So I'm working with a few really forward-thinking, future-focused organizations, and we are committed to ongoing learning and healing journeys for their team, for developing programs where people holding space can have continued support in learning and growing, and committed to creating new policies and strategies that actually support an integration of the work. Because even if you're doing all your healing work individually or in a group, if the system doesn't support you to integrate it, it's kind of a bit useless. And that's a waste of resources. And that's when people start to feel like, hey, am I wasting my energy? Am I a hamster on a wheel? Why is this not shifting?
Right. Yeah, no. And one of the big things is the left side of the brain will automatically go to the data part of it, right? What's in it for us? How does this help us? And I hope no one has ever asked you, what's the ROI of us doing this, right? Oh, you're nodding your head. Has somebody actually asked you that?
They want to know, like, what does it mean for the bottom line? And I understand that because it is a business decision. I think at this, you know, to answer that question, I always say it's about looking longer term. It's about looking at not having a workforce who is burnt out and needing extra mental health days all of the time. It's about not having, you know, a slew of people quitting because they don't like the culture anymore. But I'm not ever going to say, yeah, each month you're going to get X amount of extra dollars. This is a long haul. And it's only leaders who really see that and want to nurture their people first that are going to explore that. I've been doing some amazing work with organizations in the US, and I've found that they've been far more receptive to what I'm sharing, and what I'm promoting is, I think, a really important step for us in terms of workplace and culture.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to, I often say, think about the cost of not doing it is a lot of the things you talked about. And then the other thing is, as you likely said, over a period of time, there'll be more research, more data. And then when you have these, the quantifiable benefits of companies that did it, and you can show then that'll become a tipping point, right? Everybody else will want to jump on the bandwagon.
Sometimes people say, where's your data? And I say, I'm creating the data. This is anytime you create something new, there's no data, but that takes a huge amount of trust. So usually I will work with leaders and organizations where the leader really connects to my work. They've usually gone on their own healing journey themselves, and they're just really committed to taking a leap and trying to make a sustained shift.
So I'm guessing a large part of your mission then is to sort of educate people on the importance of doing this in itself, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of my writing and speaking is all about. But I also believe in meeting people where they are and not burning myself out through the use of force. All I can do is speak about these things in ways that feel congruent for me and work with people who are ready. And those who are not ready, I won't be working with them. And that is also okay.
And they will be ready someday. And they're just not ready now.
I hope so.
Yes. So I'm going to come back to your writing because I wanted to pivot to that. But I haven't forgotten. You mentioned the breath therapy that you talked about earlier that you went through. Question, are those the kind of tools, the way that could be used for the healing part of it?
There are so many different types of breath work and modalities that use breath. What I incorporate into the way I work and also what I teach is just one particular small piece. So it's like I've taken pieces from, you know, many, many different things and said, this is what I think is a holistic way to support recovery. The breath is the doorway to the body, and the breath is the essence of our life force. And I believe it is a way we can not only connect into our body, but a way that we can discharge threat or stress or emotion. So something that I use often and that I teach, I call it a breath release. And so what usually happens before working with this tool is that a client has connected to either some physical sensation, stressful physical sensation in their body, and or an emotion. So let's take, for example, that there's been a heaviness in the chest and they've connected to the experience or the emotion of grief. And usually when working, I would have also helped them connect to a particular experience that grief connects to. So that at least helps keep it very micro and very directed. And what will happen is that I'll help the client connect into the sensations in the body of the grief and of that experience. And then I'll help them guide their breath to breathe in and connect to it and to exhale through their open mouth and let it begin to move and express and release. And this can be incredibly powerful. And there's always this palpable sense of letting go. Some of the things that can happen are people's body might twitch a little or shake. Some people might have sound coming out. Some clients may cough. And when talking about grief, sometimes it feels like this black smoke coming out of the lungs. Some people laugh. Some people, their lips shiver. And some people very organically have words that just organically speak. And they may be in their mother tongue if English is not their mother tongue. So there's this beautiful discharge that happens that's very effortless when it comes through the connection to the breath and that gentle guidance.
Very, very fascinating. And you know, you're in Singapore, I'm here, we're both in Asia, and a lot of the Asian cultures from India, these yoga, meditation, China, et cetera, there's so many different practices that are there that lend it to being centered, the whole holistic body and mind aspects. Are you also sort of leveraging some of those or some of these grounded in that?
So I've done plenty of workshops on the power of breath and taught all of these, they're regulating breath techniques, you know, whether you draw them through yoga or other lineages, they're designed to either upregulate or downregulate the nervous system. So either I want to feel calm or I want to feel more energized. That's the very, very basic gist of it. So I've taught many breath workshops, except when it comes to healing, I want us to learn that trying to regulate ourselves and shift our state, it can be a tool to help us in the moment, but it's not necessarily a transformative practice. If we are holding onto a sense of threat or a sense of rage or a sense of grief, to really move the needle and transform it, we need to access it, express it, and release it. And so there's so much focus in healing and self-help about calming down. Let's all calm down. Let's calm down. But to move through and transform something, it's not about calming down. It's about building the capacity to be safe with it and to express it and let it go. And so when I work therapeutically, that is what I'm using breath for, not to regulate.
Right. And a final question, because I want to go talk about your writing in a few minutes. So when you work with people who come to you and say, okay, I'm ready to go through this journey, actually, as I'm even thinking the question, I'm realizing how stupid it is, but I'll ask it anyway. How long does a typical, you know, healing process take? I know you'll say it's very individualistic, but what's been your guidance or what's been your experience in this?
First of all,
experience trauma, right?
So to me, healing is a never-ending evolutionary process, but it just gets more gentle and intelligent and easeful and graceful as we go. So it's actually about cultivating a deep awareness, a lot of capacity, and all the right tools. When somebody comes to see me for the first time, they usually don't have all of those things. They don't have the safety, the capacity, the awareness, or the tool. And my job is to create a safe relational dynamic where safety increases, capacity increases, and resource increases, and the confidence increases to continue on the journey of life without me. And so when I initially work with a client, we commit to a period of 3 months. And to me, 3 months is a very initial starting point for developing a relational sense of safety and an internal somatic sense of safety. Once that happens, that's when much deeper work can begin. So After 3 months, it's really common that my clients will work with me anywhere between 9 months and 3 years, depending on the level of complexity of their trauma and also the level of, I guess, how much it has decontextualized into the world around them and the presence or lack of resources and other supportive relationships in their life. Because that is the number one thing that will help us, is to have resource, respectful resource and relationship around us. A lot of people don't have that, and it takes time to build that. I always say the 9 months because that's the time we're in the womb, right? So when we're healing our trauma, if we have deep relational trauma or developmental trauma, it's like we formed from the origin of threat and exclusion. And so through working with this very relational approach, it's often over around 9 months, give or take, that that can repattern and the client can learn, hey, I am safe with this human in this world and inside me. And now I truly believe and trust that I can go out and have that same sense of safety elsewhere. And that's the goal. And of course, some clients will take a bit longer to get there. And then there's another piece of, you know, it's great to have a therapist on the whole journey, of not just when we're trying to deal with difficulty. I've been seeing my therapist weekly for 5 years and I don't intend to stop because the journey continues and there's so much to sort through, particularly, you know, I've had a very complex trauma history. So it just continues.
I like that. And like I said, I knew you were going to say it's a journey, but it's just so important to hear you get our listeners to hear your perspective. Okay, so I know you wrote the book, Why Am I Like This? So tell our listeners a little bit about the book. Is it out yet? When does it come out? What is the book about?
Why Am I Like This is all about understanding trauma and how to heal. And it released with Penguin Random House last year in September. And it's been beautiful putting this out into the world. It's essentially my guidebook for healing. So I encourage people not to just try and read it once through, but to return to it again and again as they continue on their journey. And it every chapter includes sort of sharings or lessons, as well as pieces of my personal story where I lived and learned them, as well as self-inquiry questions to help the reader really get into and understand this piece in their journey. And there's also a somatic meditation at the end of each chapter, so clients can actually begin to get in their body and support change from a somatic origin as well. So there's a lot in there.
And what was your inspiration to get this book out? Is it to, again, spread the word a little bit, to create that importance? What was your inspiration?
People had been asking me to write a book for a really long time and I wasn't ready. And then 2 New Year's Eve ago, I was all of a sudden, I started writing. And I think I see so many people suffering from trauma that either have no idea how to heal. They're trying everything and everything and nothing shifting. And that was my story for so many years. And I also see so many people with trauma that don't even have any idea that that's what's wrong. And they go on creating chaos for themselves and people around them again and again. And I think that it is the root of so much of our modern world problems. And so what I wanted with the book is to start making the conversation accessible and to distill very complex concepts into words that were very digestible. So not everybody needs to study to become a therapist or a neuroscientist in order to heal their trauma. And so I hope that the book helps meet people where they are human and really begin to heal and understand themselves and each other in a much deeper and more compassionate way.
And what's the feedback been on the book? I'm now inspired to go pick up a copy of it. And what's the feedback been on the book so far?
So far, the feedback's been very beautiful. I haven't had any horrible comments, but maybe people just don't share horrible comments. I don't know. But a couple of my favorite sort of responses to the book is that people say it feels like I'm speaking right to them or that I'm inside their head. And that makes me feel very happy. And the other thing is that people are just answering that question. Oh, now I get why I'm like this. I get why there's been this cycle of dysfunction, or why I've been feeling this way. So something that's really common with trauma is that we feel like the me that we are isn't quite who we're meant to be, but we don't really know how to talk about it. So we don't, and we shove that shame down and just keep going with this shell, this external shell, and we're smiling and thinking, yep, but something's not quite right. And I think when we can make sense of ourselves in the context of trauma and learn, actually, there's nothing wrong with me. It's what's happened in the past that's causing me to experience this way. That's just very, very powerful.
In a sense, what I'm connecting back to what you said earlier in the conversation, the book is almost like the safe space as they read it to go through and have that connection as well, right?
Thank you for that reflection. I love that. I hope that it is that.
Yeah, and based on the feedback that you're getting, it definitely sounds like it is for many people who read it. And that's why I'm more inspired to go get another copy of it. So here's a question to you. I mean, as we sort of wrap it up, I mean, this podcast is called Shiny Happy People, and it's really to understand what makes people happy, what is their secret for success. So in your case, you went through the trauma, and you obviously found ways to navigate through that and do the work, the amazing work that you're doing. I'm guessing and sensing that a lot of your work when you have these conversations is working with people through their trauma. So you're hearing a lot of this grief, angst, pain, whatever it might be. So how do you navigate through that? How do you keep yourself centered? How do you make yourself positive every day? What's your secret?
I make sure that I never hold on to anything. So if I'm feeling threat or shame or anger or grief or pain, I will not avoid it and I will not suppress it. I will make space. I will hold space myself. I will look at myself compassionately and I will let it live and breathe and let it go. So I'm in constant regeneration, and that's what allows me to be here. You know, perhaps not happy and shiny all the time, but authentic and transformative all the time. So I can continue to return to a state of peace and vitality again and again.
Oh, that is so brilliant. Just don't fight it, in essence, right? Just hold that space. Yeah, that is brilliant. And what is your go-to for lifting your mood? Is it music? You go out for a walk? What's your thing?
Music is a big part of my life, but I also love to move my body. So I love to work out, and I do all kinds of different workouts. And something else that is a very big resource for me is the ocean. So I live about a 10-minute walk to the ocean. So to put my feet on sand and listen to the waves is incredibly restorative. I feel like the ocean is holding me as I am holding everybody else.
Brilliant. So there's a tip: go do more exercise and go find beach. Right? That's for everything. Oh, this is excellent conversation. Thank you so much, Natalia. Really, really enjoyed this conversation. I hope 2023, because we're doing this in early January, and I hope this year is the year that the work that you're doing, the conversations around trauma, more companies get inspired to create that space, right? Do real meaningful work. I think you need to clone yourself, because very soon you can't be everywhere.
Thank you so much for the kind words of support. I'm working on it.
Great. Thank you, Natalia. Take care.
Okay. I hope you found that conversation interesting. Do check out her book, Why Am I Like This? Her journey is going to be even more significant moving forward, and I will definitely be tracking her progress and maybe even catching up with her for a cup of coffee, but I think all of you should as well. Okay, and that's pretty much it, folks. it's a wrap for the first episode of 2023. Send us some feedback. What kind of topics do you want us to discuss? And with that, it's over and out.